Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti to USA in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the 81st episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we don't have a guest, but we have a ton of things to get to. We had a very controversial and exciting weekend in Serie A with a lot of referee drama and whatnot. Some interesting results, so we'll get into that. We, of course, have the latest on transfers, which there's a lot going on, especially for a January window. But before we get to all that madness, I'm joined by our great friend, co-host, outstanding producer, Alex Goldberg. I wanted to take a moment to reflect on Gigi Buffon's career. So yesterday he turned 40. There were a lot of tributes on Twitter. So I'm going to simply ask you, Alex, when you hear the words Gigi Buffon, what are the first things that come to mind to you, buddy?
Passion. Passion, passion, passion. I think we're all here. You and I are here on this podcast. And anybody listening, we're here because we're passionate about this sport. And is there anybody who resembles passion more than Gigi Buffon? Because I was admittedly a latecomer to this beautiful game, the World Cup was clearly the first event I started watching. And all I can remember, David, is Gigi belting the national anthem. And a big thing for me is I'm a sports nut, right? So I watch a game, and if my team loses, I'm admittedly upset for hours after. And it always bugs me. There's a player in the NBA, his name's Dwight Howard, if anybody hasn't heard of him. David, he makes a mistake and he smiles. And that, as a fan, just drives me so crazy because I know that he's going home and he's enjoying his luxurious lifestyle and not really caring after. But with somebody like Gigi Buffon, it bothers him if they lose, and he loves it if they win. I mean, it bothered him so much that I think back in 2003 after the Champions League final, he had depression. But I'm not asking for a player to get depressed if something goes wrong. But I want it to mean something to that player. And I know that every time Gigi Buffon is on that pitch, it means something. And to also think about it, what a captain, what a leader. If you think about Juventus and all of the leaders they have on the team, Marchisio, Barzagli, obviously Bonucci at once upon a time, and Chiellini, to think that really none of those guys were ever captains, here and there maybe, but because Gigi Buffon was between those white sticks, he's just the ultimate leader. I think any football team would be lucky to have him. If anybody knows, I always loved Paul Pogba, and I think every time, whether it was a loss or a win, Buffon would go over to him and console him or congratulate him. I just think he's a stand-up guy and just the definition of a leader, and he resembles passion. So that's what I think of, David. What about you?
So, you know, obviously the great saves, the amazing career, that definitely stands out. But without a doubt, the first two things that come to mind for me, and to me would make him pretty unique, are the fact that right after winning the World Cup with Italy in 2006, and Buffon was really one of the key players on that team. You know, Cannavaro won the Ballon d'Or that year. Pirlo got a lot of credit. Grosso with a lot of the clutch moments in the semifinals and final. But Buffon was really as important a symbol on that 2006 World Cup winning team. And right after that happened, he went to Serie B with Juve. Now, granted, there were other players who did that as well, but he was smack in the middle of his prime, could have gone really to a lot of clubs. He could have almost really picked which club he wanted to go to. Now, some Milan fans will tell you that there was a deal close to the table and he could have gone to Milan for Abbiati and cash. That never happened. I don't know if that deal was actually true or not. I wasn't covering transfers back then. But suffice to say, Milan wasn't the only team Buffon could have gone that year. So if you want to discredit him for that, it's like, oh, he could have gone to Milan. Well, he didn't go anywhere, bottom line. And Milan's not the only club that could have wanted him back there. And the last image that I have of him that really sticks out to me is when Sweden eliminated Italy in the qualifier for the World Cup, a horrible elimination, the lowest point for Italian football in quite some time. The first person to face the media wasn't the president of the federation, Tavecchio, wasn't the manager of the team, Ventura. It was captain Gigi Buffon, who had very little to do with Italy being eliminated. So that really stood out to me. You know, recently I did with our friends at Italian Football TV, we did, you know, best players for a specific characteristic. And I was really torn because for leadership, there's a lot of great examples, Maldini, Zanetti, even Juve's previous captain, Del Piero. But I always like to say that sometimes circumstances have a lot to do with the legacy of a person. As an example, Winston Churchill is considered one of the greatest political and the leaders of a nation of all time, but it also, he so happened to be at a time in power where there was a lot of drama for him to handle. So I think like Buffon had a lot of opportunities to show his legacy. You, unfortunately, not good ones. You would go in the Serie B in Italy being eliminated by the World Cup, and he really stepped up to the plate for that. The other thing that I'll say is that to me, it's really a little bit unfortunate that a lot of yesterday, what you read on Twitter, there were so many positive things said about Buffon, but so many negative things as well. And to me, you know, it's really a shame when fandom, you know, supporting a team and hating the rival team takes away from not appreciating greatness. And we talked about it with LeBron and Messi. Like, you know, if you're a sports fan, and I've been following sports for, you know, over 30 years, players like Buffon don't come around that often. So to me, it's really a shame when we spend the time, that the big birthday for him, that that's part of it. And, you know, the same happens with Juve fans, with Totti making fun of his lack of trophies. Yet, you know, those same fans, you know, are upset when Vidal and Pogba leave for lack of loyalty. So it cuts both ways. So to me, that was a little bit sad, but very happy for Buffon overall. The response was really, really overwhelming. So great stuff there. Now, speaking of great stuff, let's review a little bit of what happened in Serie A this weekend. We'll do that by going over the winners and losers from the weekend. I think some of them are pretty obvious and some not. So first, we had Atalanta with a big win against Sassuolo, their fourth win on an away match in a row. They're really hitting their stride in Serie A. I think Atalanta got a lot of credit for doing incredibly well in the Europa League and the Coppa Italia. In Serie A, maybe they underachieved a little bit, but recently they're getting back on track. Then in the following game, we had Higuain and his scoring drought, which was over 700 minutes, finally scoring in a match for Juve. I think Higuain's actually been playing really well, creating a lot of space for his teammates, but it's good for him to get back on track scoring. I have a feeling he'll be going on one of his roles. Then the next winners and losers, a little bit odd. I thought Spal's keeper, Mire, we've been hearing a lot about this highly rated goalkeeper prospect, had a very good match against Inter. And despite Inter giving up a goal in the last minute and a disappointing draw against Spal, I'm still going to say they're winners for the weekend just because both Roma and Lazio lost. So actually Inter gained some ground in that race for the Champions League spot. Then on Sunday, we had a lot of winners. I want to give a shout-out to Juventus own striker Keane, had a brace for Hellas Verona against Fiorentina. Very impressive match. Torino's manager, Walter Mazzarri, keeps doing well at the club. I'm not surprised in the least. Actually, there's a trend for a lot of the managers that came in mid-season having a big impact for their new teams. I thought in the match between Napoli and Bologna, Palacio for Bologna had really a great match. What a career he's had. To me, one of the most underrated strikers in Serie A of the past 10 years. And, of course, we had Mertens, who's back on track scoring goals as well. Then from the Milan match, big winners. You got to give a lot of credit to Gattuso, and we'll get into a little bit more in the questions. But Milan is finally starting to show some signs of having some character. They're actually coming back in matches when they fall behind. A lot of positive signs. And to me, the big winner in that Milan match was right back Calabria. It was probably the best match I've ever seen him play. I thought he was absolutely sensational there. Then in the last match of the game, Sampdoria's big win against Roma. Of course, we had Duvan Zapata with the game winner. Sampdoria keeper Viviano was absolutely outstanding in that match. And although Roma lost, it was another great match for Alisson, especially in the first half. So our friend Richard Hall pointed this out, that Roma's goalkeeper coach deserves a lot of credit, because last year Szczesny was arguably the best keeper in Serie A. This season, Alisson. I don't think anyone would have predicted who it is. So I did a little bit of research to see who Roma's goalkeeper coach is. And it's actually a somewhat familiar name. His name is Marco Savorani. He used to play for Pescara in the 90s as a keeper. He's been Roma's goalkeeper coach for quite a few years. And what's very interesting about him is he was part of Conte's staff at Siena the year that he had the betting scandal. So Mourinho could make some jokes about him too. So those are our winners for the weekend. On the flip side, losers. Definitely a very tough week for referees and the VAR. I think VAR overall is a good thing, but to me, definitely VAR hasn't made Serie A any less dramatic or any less controversial. Before, there was all arguments if it was a penalty, if it wasn't a penalty, if it was offside or not offside. We still have that with VAR, but in addition to that, we have a whole other layer on when VAR is applied and when it isn't. So if you're into conspiracy theories, and people in Serie A tend to be, the VAR, to me, has just brought on a whole new layer of controversy on when the VAR is activated or not. Other losers, I had Sassuolo's keeper, Consigli, had a very bad match against his former team, Atalanta. And another reason why I have him as a loser is there was some momentum on Consigli potentially becoming Szczesny's backup at Juve should Buffon retire this year. But now there seems to be quite a bit of momentum on Buffon staying one more season. So Consigli, bad match against his former team, and it seems the opportunity of joining Juve will have to wait for a little bit. Last two losers, I think Perisic has been absolutely dreadful in the past month or so. Now, all the tweets on Manchester United being right on not overspending on him, you can retweet those now. It won't look as bad. Not surprisingly, that as Perisic struggles, so does Inter. And what a fall from grace for Roma's coach, Di Francesco. Another really tough loss against Sampdoria. They've only collected 3 points in the last six matches. Not long ago, we were praising Di Francesco as a potential manager of the year in Serie A. Now, you wonder if a few string of more bad results, if that could bring a change on the bench. So those are our winners and losers from a great Serie A weekend. On Thursday, we'll preview the matches next weekend. So, Alex, let's get into the fantastic questions we get from our listeners. As always, you can send us questions on transfers, Serie A, music, TV, you name it, using the CalcioLand hashtag. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, well, let's be topical and timely. What is the latest on Dzeko, Emerson Palmieri, and Chelsea?
So as we recorded, so on Thursday was interesting because we had John Solano. We were really excited because everything was lining up perfectly. There was a lot of momentum on both Dzeko and Palmieri going to Stamford Bridge. Now, since then, things have changed. It seems like Dzeko's wife, who they recently bought a house in Rome, she got a lot of pressure from Roma fans on social media. It seems like they have some close ties to the city. As it looked close that he was leaving, maybe they had some second thoughts. So they started asking for the moon in the negotiations, an extra year on the contract, a massive salary. We know Chelsea's stance usually with players in their 30s is to take it year by year. With a newer player, you can't really do that because of the amortization of a transfer fee. But it looks like Dzeko was asking for too much. If that wasn't enough, then Patrick Schick had another injury. He'll be out likely another 2 weeks. So at this point, that deal is dead. Dzeko will almost certainly finish the season at Roma. On the bright side, Emerson Palmieri, that deal is all but done. He'll travel to London. He'll take the medical and sign tomorrow. That's the last report from Di Marzio. If you're very interested in hearing more about Emerson, our friend John Solano really gave us a glowing review. I'm going to be honest. I think I rate him maybe a little bit less than John. Granted, I didn't see him as much. I'll simply tell you, I think he's better than Zappacosta. I'm not certain he's better than Marcos Alonso. But again, you guys know that I rate Marcos Alonso probably higher than most. So that's the latest on those two.
Well, I also defend Mark.
Give us your take, Alex. So let's do the next question first, and I'll get your whole thoughts, Alex, because I think they kind of tie in a little bit together.
I think they do, David. So let's just move to the next one. What's delayed, and I'm going to say this in a very bitter fashion, What's the latest on Arsenal's pursuit of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang? Could Michy Batshuayi and or Olivier Giroud be factors in this negotiation?
Yeah, I didn't want to steal your thunder, Alex, but I have a feeling you'll be even more passionate with the next tidbit. So, good news for Arsenal. They are looking in very good shape to sign Aubameyang. Let's give them credit because they were going to lose Alexis Sanchez for nothing at the end of the season. Because he left mid-season, they got Mkhitaryan in the deal. It looks very promising for them getting Aubameyang. So you know what? I think in a way they made great lemonade and with absolute vodka out of those lemons, because I think it's actually turning out really good for them. Now, what's really interesting about this is it doesn't look like Giroud is going to be part of the deal. Look like it's going to be a pure cash deal for Aubameyang to Arsenal. But this is where your team, Chelsea, is a factor. It's not out of the question that Batshuayi, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, could be going to Dortmund, maybe on loan, but could be going to Dortmund to essentially replace Aubameyang. So I don't want to steal your thunder, but if you want to be an upset Chelsea fan, I have a feeling you could be. And it looks like Giroud on the bright side might be heading to Chelsea. The good news is, unlike Dzeko, he'd at least be eligible to play in the Champions League. So with all that information, Alex, our listeners love your rants. What's your take on what's happening here?
Well, CFC stands for Chelsea Football Club, but I'm pretty sure it stands for Complacency Football Club. David, it would be so insulting if Aubameyang went to Arsenal, Michy Batshuayi went to Dortmund, and Chelsea was left with Olivier Giroud. It's ridiculous to even think about. I'm going to leave the Dzeko thing alone because on its own, that's fine. He's 31 years old. If they really are going to ask for the world, fine. And it won't help my narrative right now, my negative narrative, to talk about Emerson Palmieri, because I'm actually very excited to see him play. But let's go back to Aubameyang. Why in God's name are Chelsea not interested in a star striker? Chelsea's best player is Eden Hazard. There's no debating that. He's the best player. You ask any fan of any team, he's their best player. David, wouldn't you want to make your best player happy? He doesn't want to play with Olivier Giroud. He doesn't want to play with Peter Crouch. He doesn't want to play with Andy Carroll. And Chelsea has been so lucky that their best player, who, by the way, most best players are prima donnas. They'll speak. Hazard has kept his mouth shut. He used to play with Aubameyang back at Lille when Aubameyang was on loan at Lille. But instead, Chelsea doesn't care about making their best player happy or their fans happy. They would rather get rid of Michy Batshuayi, who, by the way, is already scoring. He scored a brace yesterday, but Conte has clearly already made up his mind on Batshuayi. He would rather either take in Giroud or have an injured Alvaro Morata and a backup striker in Eden Hazard, who needs to be a wing player. It makes no sense. Chelsea is in complete shambles with how they're operating. Last thing, David, we talk about Chelsea having this policy with players over 30 years old. That's fine. They also have a policy where they don't really care about the youth. So they're really putting themselves in a pickle if they don't want young players. And no, and I don't want anybody to reply to me on Twitter that the other Premier League clubs don't really play young players. Because guess what? Manchester City is a wagon, and they still manage to play young players like a Phil Foden. So Chelsea doesn't like youth players, but also doesn't like players over 30. Make up your damn mind. I honestly, David, I cannot wait until Chelsea plays Arsenal. I want Chelsea to win, but I also want Aubameyang to score. I really do. So that's it. I'm red and I need a glass of water. So let's move on to the next question.
Fantastic.
I can't wait for the transfer window to be over, probably for other reasons that you have. David, what are the main storylines left in the January transfer window in Serie A?
So I'll tell you this, as far as January windows go, this was as good as it gets. But I say this mainly abroad, mainly in the Premier League, mainly in La Liga. We had some in Serie A, but the excitement was really there. This was as good as it gets, because usually in January it's not that exciting. And this gives me hope that maybe in the summer all leagues decide to shorten the transfer window. To me, it's just ridiculously long. It's a huge grind for people that cover it, even the clubs and everyone. And look at how many big deals got done in these months. And this is with teams playing. So that gives me hope there. So in Serie A, there isn't too much. I'd say the main, most intriguing storyline is Napoli's continued pursuit to bring in more depth. They brought in the winger Younes from Ajax, and now they're trying to bring Politano from Sassuolo. It looks for a pretty high transfer fee, over 20 million. I think he's a pretty good player. I don't know how much he moves the needle. This could be more like the deals like that Napoli has done with Pavoletti, where they almost instantly regret it. But at least they'd keep him away from Juve, who could jump back into that race now that Cuadrado is hurt. The other storyline, the big one, is Inter's pursuit of Pastore. There seems to be some momentum for that one. That should be a fairly interesting one. Like, if Inter can bring in, they've already brought in Lisandro Lopez, the center back. They've already brought in Rafinha. If they bring in Pastore, that's a pretty good haul for January. And then the other key one would be, you know, is Roma going to look to replace Emerson Palmieri? They've been linked to Alex Vidal from a Barcelona player that Monchi had at his previous club as well. So those are kind of the main ones. I'm sure we'll see a lot of moves by clubs like Genoa, minor clubs who tend to be very busy at the end. But I'd say the three main ones are Politano, Napoli, Pastore, Inter, Vidal, Roma, and in general, if Roma is going to try to make some more moves, because although Dzeko's staying, Schick's injury might be something they look at as well.
All right, David, I just have to throw this in here. You wrote on your wonderful ESPN Transfer Rumorator column today about Alexandro and maybe Paris Saint-Germain. I think that would be so funny if Antonio Conte went to PSG and had Alexandro as his left back. That would be just adorable. All right, let's move on. David, why don't Roma get bigger returns for the star players they sell? Just look at Mohamed Salah compared to Coutinho.
Well, that's a great point, but, you know, hindsight is also always 2020. I remember when the Salah deal was happening, and this is one of the extremely rare times, and I repeat, extremely rare times, where I was doing some reporting myself on this. We were getting some info on the figure. A lot of people were saying, geez, Roma's getting a great return for someone that's already been a bust in the Premier League. You know, people were pointing out his time at Chelsea. They were like, oh, okay, they're getting 40 million. Yeah, this guy's been great in Serie A. We know he can't do it in the Premier League. So, you know, perception is reality in those senses. At the same time, you know, I think, too, we need to be careful not comparing deals between Premier League clubs, because I think there's definitely an inflation fee there because both sides of the deal have so much money to spend, so it's harder to reach an agreement. So I think, you know, anytime you have a Serie A club selling to the Premier League, they're kind of on a different playing field than a Premier League one. But I do think Roma now is going to be toughing up. I have a feeling Alisson is going to go for a bigger fee than expected. Look at his backup keeper on Brazil, Ederson, I think went for around 35, 40 million. Alisson starts over him for Brazil. So I think he'll definitely go for more than that. So it's going to be interesting to see what Roma's doing. I mean, I got to say, if they were going to really get over 30 million in bonuses for Dzeko, that would have been a very intriguing return for them. And I'm actually writing about Roma and how I think they should blow it up. You can read it tomorrow on Calcio Mercato. So maybe they were already learning their lesson by holding out for so much for Dzeko.
All right. Milan had a nice weekend. David, can they make a late push for a Champions League spot?
So this is a great question. And this is what I've decided to do with Milan. Because, look, you know, definitely some very encouraging signs. I said it at the top. What's most intriguing to me is under Montella, if Milan fell behind, you knew there was no chance they're coming back. They're definitely showing a lot more fight under Gattuso. I think what's really good about Gattuso is he's sticking to pretty much the same lineup. There's some continuity there. That helps a ton. But I'm going to hold my feet on the ground with Milan. It's so easy because all of us, you know, we keep saying, oh, you know, what would make Serie A even better than it is now, and it really is on its way up, is for Milan to be Milan again. And then, of course, there's the Milan fans themselves that are looking for great reasons to optimism. So I'm going to keep my feet on the ground. Milan's still about 10 points out of a Champions League spot in Serie A. There are some teams they need to make up for. Definitely a great sign that they beat Lazio. Lazio is a team that done extremely well against all the top teams. But I'm going to keep my feet on the ground and try to see it more on a week-by-week basis. There was also a time that Mihailovic, we thought he had turned the team around. Montella did at least bring him to Europe. But definitely some encouraging signs with Milan, but I'm going to keep it more on a game-by-game basis with them.
All right, David, this listener asks, how could you have picked Franco Baresi over Maldini in the defense category in the ultimate team you did with Italian Football TV?
So I mentioned this at the top. I had a lot of fun doing this team with our friend Marco and Mike, and I told them they should also release my original team in there. So you have old man Dave versus the young and hip guys at Italian Football TV. So here's the thing. I think, you know, you never go wrong picking Maldini as the best defender. Now, I'm older. I watched a lot of Franco Baresi, all of Franco Baresi's career at Milan. When both he and Maldini were playing on Milan at the same time, there was no debate that Baresi was the better player. Granted, Baresi was in his prime. Maldini was young and was coming up. But I'll still take Baresi, even when Maldini moved as a central defender. Maldini was great. There's no wrong answer if you pick him. But I still think he was also a better left back than he was center back. Baresi, too, won all the Champions League, won the Scudetti, of course. He also does have a World Cup. He's remembered because I think he was the captain on the 94 team where Italy lost on penalty kicks against Brazil. I think had Italy won that World Cup, we'd be talking about Baresi the way people talk about Beckenbauer these days. But he also previously won one. Granted, he was a bench player in 82 with the 82 team. So, you know, it's really, really close. But I think I'm going to give a very slight edge to Baresi. But really, no wrong answer if you pick Maldini. Two to me, where it really sticks out to me, is that Baresi was kind of the first real sweeper to really revolutionize the position. Previously, sweepers played behind defenders who did man-to-man coverage. He kind of played the sweeper role in a zone defense, which is almost counterintuitive, and he did really well. So to me, Franco Baresi, amazing player, but there's no wrong answer if had you picked Maldini over him. I just wanted to give you guys a little bit more context.
All right, I like it. Oh boy, I'm going to remain calm for this one. Antonio Conte recently stated that Chelsea would have to fire him for him to leave this summer. Is this just gamesmanship, or is there a chance he leaves in the summer?
Well, we've talked about it on the podcast. I'm not going to say very surprised, but I'll just put it this way. I'd be surprised if he's coaching Chelsea next season. I don't know, Alex, you've been saying it too. It almost looks like I'm not saying he's quitting, but he's really demoralized. And I love Conte. I think he's terrific. But I think he's a little bit more of a front runner type of guy when things get hard. I'm not sure he's really the best for that. Now, you know, people give me a lot of credit, and I am proud of the fact that I pointed out that Conte is the ideal coach to take you from A to B. So if you're taking over a team that's in a crisis, get them back to where they need to be. There's no one better than Conte. But then going from B to C is a little bit maybe not his forte. So I think that's what we're seeing at Chelsea, not probably not getting great help from the board. So I think, too, one of the reasons that he says, you know, he won't quit is there's a clause in his contract where Chelsea has to pay him if they fire him. He'd probably love that outcome. But I think even if he don't, he'll likely be going to PSG. And as you pointed out, ironically, and I guess that would be a pretty big gut punch for you and other Chelsea fans, would be to see Conte. Maybe a lot of them wouldn't be that upset after this season, but seeing him reunited with Alessandro at PSG would be pretty tough, I would imagine.
Yes, it would. All right, moving on. Considering that Bernardeschi didn't replace Paulo Dybala when Allegri went back to the 4-2-3-1 formation, is it safe to say the former Fiorentina attacker isn't Dybala's long-term replacement at Juve?
So I guess you could make this point. I don't make so many, you know, sweeping statements based on one game in season and all. To me, what's really interesting is could eventually, basically the question is, if Dybala leaves, does Juve already have his replacement on the squad in Bernardeschi? And in a lot of ways, I would probably say yes. But then it really depends, you know, what formation will Juve play long-term next season. Now, they're very close to getting Emre Can. Marotta, their director, talked about it today. So if you have a midfield with him, Pjanic, and probably another one, you're looking at a 4-3-3, a variation of that. So I'm not going to make a sweeping statement that the fact that Bernardeschi didn't replace Dybala in the lineup doesn't mean he's his replacement. Let's see what happens. I also think it's far from certain that Dybala will leave Juve this summer. You know, especially now he's got this injury. It's been an up and down season. Really wouldn't surprise me if he at least does his fourth season in Turin, which is what we saw Pogba do.
All right. Staying on Juve, what do you make of Juve's dominance on the Italian transfer market? Is it just a matter of competence and having more resources, or is there something shady going on?
So it's a great question, and I think this really became more of a topic with the whole situation with Napoli, going after Politano on Sassuolo, a club that is notoriously, and it's not even a secret, they're very close to Juve. They collaborate on a lot of deals. So here's the thing. I really do think this is a matter more, and I wrote it in my preview of the January window, like Juve is so much further ahead than the other Serie A clubs revenue-wise. And the reason for this is because they have their team-owned stadium and because they had these two great runs in the Champions League. Now, granted, they didn't win those two cups, but they made so much money in those competitions that they are in great financial shape. So we have Inter, who has financial fair play issues. Same with Roma. We have Milan, who has their own financial issues of their own. We have Napoli, who, to their credit, every year turn a slight profit. Their books are in great shape, but they don't have nowhere near the revenues of Juve. And maybe if they cared a little bit more of the Champions League in due time, they'll get there. So I think there are a lot of factors that you can say, you know, Juve is in such good shape that in January, rather than thinking about fixing their current squad, they were planting the seeds for deals in the summer. So they met with Sampdoria about some of their best prospects. They met with Cagliari about Barella and highly rated Korean striker Han. So they've been doing, you know, a lot of moves to try to, you know, reserve the best prospect in Serie A. So, you know, to me, it's just the richer keep getting richer. When you have a financial advantage, it's easier to do more of that. The other thing, too, though, is, you know, Napoli got made fun of for doing all these deals for unknown players. But guess what? This is kind of putting their big boy pants and starting to act like Juve. As an example, Mendes negotiated the extension for Goulam with Napoli. That deal got done week after Napoli signs this unknown player, a Mendes client from the second division in Portugal, people never heard of. You know, this is unfortunately kind of the deals that you do, you know, to get in the good graces of an agent. The other thing is the way I see it, to me, I'm not big on prospects. People, it's very easy to overrate prospects. I kind of see them as lottery tickets. You buy as many of them as possible and hope that you hit on a couple. And Juve has done this a ton. We see your team, Chelsea, do that a ton. And Napoli's starting to do that too. They're trying to buy all these random players and trying to see, okay, maybe this guy will blow up. So I don't think there's too much shadiness. I just think now people understand a little bit more how the transfer market works. It's not, you know, it's not that deals happen in a vacuum. A lot of times deals are connected. Players from the same agent move to the same club. We saw Lazio do that with Mendes, Napoli. So I don't think it's particularly shady, but I could see if you didn't really take the time to analyze it, how you would think that.
All right, David, what is your take on Monaco spending over $20 million to acquire Genoa prospect Pellegrini?
So this was a very interesting deal. So Juve was competing to sign Pellegrini as well. They didn't. They were only willing to pay up to a certain amount, $20 million. Monaco paid $20 million. It was very substantial bonuses, and he's going there. I actually think probably for the Italian national team, it's probably better that he went to Monaco than Juve. Few better places to develop a young talent than him. At Juve, maybe he would have been lost in the shuffle. To me, though, the big winner here is Genoa. They make a pure profit on a homegrown player who, granted, has shown some very good flashes in Serie A, but, you know, they make it a huge profit on him. We don't know what's going to come out of this player or not. So good for them, probably good for the Azzurri that Pellegrini is going to develop at a club that has such a great track record with young players.
Okay, next Twitter question. Which Inter players do you see leaving in the summer? And could Spalletti also decide to leave?
So very good question. So Inter really had a tough stretch recently. I think that goal by Spalla in the last minute was a gut punch. It could have been a turnaround for them. Again, on the bright side, the other team struggled too. So as of now, Inter would be in the Champions League. And I think that's really a huge factor. I think Icardi has turned down moves in the past that he could have gone, earned more money, be on probably better teams, and he hasn't. But I do think that now he's really reached the point where his profile is so, so huge. He can really go to a top, top club that if Inter doesn't make the Champions League, it's going to be difficult to keep him. Can't exclude it because he has strong personal reasons to want to be there. But definitely one to watch. Then, you know, Perisic signed that big extension last summer. He was great up until December. He struggled now. You know, you'd have to think, you know, would Inter maybe decide to move on from him while they can still get a lot for him? The other player to watch is their great center back, Skriniar, who's had a really, really good season. He's already been linked to huge clubs. So those are really the ones to watch. Again, I think Champions League or not is going to have a lot to do with this. The player, though, that I think was really intriguing that Inter should try to keep is João Cancelo. I thought he was quite good yesterday. He's been, it took him a little while, but he's gotten used to Serie A. Really an intriguing player. He played on the left yesterday. He can play anywhere on the right wing as a defender, as an offensive winger. He'd probably be better as an offensive winger, but he seems that he's on Inter on loan, the swap deal for Condogbia. He seems to want to go back to Spain, so it's going to be an intriguing situation for Inter to see how they handle that.
All right, last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. David, why did the Oscars snub James Franco, but not Gary Oldman in the recent Oscar nominations?
So I'm going to tie it back to Buffon at the beginning, how we said that, you know, great circumstances, you know, extreme circumstances have a lot to do with legacy. So I'm going to tie it in to Gary Oldman, who played Churchill in the excellent movie Darkest Hour. So obviously Hollywood, because of the Harvey Weinstein thing, is under a lot of pressure to show that they care about sexual harassment and all and whatnot. But you know what? It's a lot easier to make an example out of someone that maybe has a smaller profile. James Franco, you know, did that movie on that movie, The Room, which was probably the worst movie ever made. I actually hear that movie is quite good where he plays the director of that movie, but it's much easier to make an example out of someone who isn't a heavy favorite to win the award than Gary Oldman, who's the odds-on favorite to win this Oscar. He's had a great career. I don't think he's ever won any Oscar. Definitely hasn't won Best Actor. So I think it makes a lot of sense that Hollywood wants to make sure he's taken care of and they'll make an example. Everyone can grandstand and say, hey, we did the right thing. We excluded James Franco. So I'm really excited. I'm almost caught up on all the big movies. We'll have an Oscar special with our friend Andrew Barker that I'm really looking forward to. So we're going to come back on Thursday with another Serie A preview weekend, and we'll wrap up the January transfer window. I do want to take a moment, though, to thank all our listeners, and I'm going to extend it to also all my readers. This was a great window for me at ESPN. Usually in the January window, they'll ask me to do 5 top 6 articles, but because the column has grown so much, I got to do 8 columns this January window. Was a lot of work, but I really appreciate the opportunity. It only happens because of my loyal readers. Shout out to my colleague, Fabio Pendolino, who helped me a lot with those columns. So I also want to thank you for the support for the podcast. You guys have been outstanding. I always say that the questions is really what makes the podcast great. Keep supporting the podcast. What you can do is also subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. We've gotten some great comments. Alex and I read them all. So we really appreciate your support. If you're on Android, please subscribe on SoundCloud. So thank you all for the support. The podcast keeps growing, and it's only thanks to you, and we really appreciate it.